Dr. Gase is steadfast in his refusal to undergo any hypnotic exploration of his experiences, though I remain hopeful that some day he will change his mind. A psychotherapist friend of mine made an interesting remark after I told her of the many cases like Dr. Gase's in which the witness has a deep-seated fear stemming from a UFO encounter, and an equally intense fear of undergoing hypnosis to explore this experience. Think of all the energy a person in a situation like that wastes, just trying to keep something unknown and disturbing out of his thoughts. It would be so much better to explore the experience and undergo whatever temporary pain there might be, just to not have to waste all that energy keeping the memory buried. This witness, reluctance to explore a suspected abduction is undoubtedly abetted by the kind of veiled threat against remembering that is apparently implanted in the minds of so many abductees. Stephen Kilburn, under hypnosis, said that he was not to remember anything, that it was serious, that he might die. He knew, of course, that the threat was not literally true, but it unnerved him nevertheless. I thought of this when Dr. Gase said, "What if I found out something so upsetting that I might die? What if it caused a heart attack?" His remarks suggested to me a buried threat, half remembered and rankling. Hundreds of abductees have been hypnotized and no one yet seems to have been the victim of a reprisal. Ventilation of the experience is, I believe, therapeutically helpful for almost everyone. Fear of the unknown is the greatest fear of all. 2. By now, the reader is familiar with many clues, both obvious and subtle, which indicate the possibility of a buried abduction experience. If someone should strongly suspect such an encounter, the final page of the book provides information on how to go about reporting it. We will try to investigate as fully as we can. The efforts of the many individuals and organizations throughout the world to investigate and record the UFO phenomenon in all its complexity are, despite the best of intentions, inadequate. What is needed now is an official governmental effort. An agency whose purpose would be fourfold. I make these recommendations despite the present national economic and political climate, which makes their implementation highly improbable. What can be done? Nevertheless, the urgency I feel about these measures requires me to list them here. First, the government has an obligation to prepare the public for the day when the extraterrestrial presence is obvious to everyone. The potential for panic and economic disruption must be recognized and effectively reduced by careful advance planning. Second, an open and official UFO investigative arm should be established, preferably internationally through the United Nations. That way, everyone would know where to file a UFO report, and also would know that the world's governments recognize the UFO phenomenon as a serious reality. Ridicule and the fear of ridicule must be eliminated once and for all. Third, a major central repository of UFO material must be created for use by the world's scientists. If we are ever to understand the mystery of UFO intentions, the efforts of Dr. Alan Hynek, Dr. David Saunders, David Webb, and Ted Blocher to establish data banks in various categories of UFO information can serve as the nucleus for an international undertaking. 1. Fourth, and most difficult to imagine, there must be some kind of effort made to communicate with the UFO occupants. I have no more of an idea of how that can be managed than the next man, yet I believe it should be attempted. Intentions must be gauged. The realities are clear. Very likely a majority of the world's scientists believe that the existence of extraterrestrial life is probable. And if that is true, some of this extraterrestrial life must be more advanced than we, and thus capable of technological feats far beyond ours. We ourselves have proved the feasibility of space travel. And so eventual contact of some kind appears inevitable. That inevitable day, however, has been placed by most of us in a vague and distant future. For many, it is literally unthinkable. But the comfort of that distance, I am afraid, is the comfort of the ostrich's sand. Our desert oasis is not as isolated as we wish to think. For me, the conclusion is inescapable. They are already here. Though I do not want to believe this, and feel decidedly unnerved by it. I believe it is true, extraterrestrials have been observing us in our innocence for many years, and we have no idea of their intentions. I began this book, not with the idea of answering questions, but with the simpler goal of raising them. The evidence I have presented establishes the existence of a clear, hard, edged, and disturbing phenomenon, one which is far more pervasive than any of us may imagine. In these last few pages, I have tried to theorize as carefully as possible what it how on L may mean, but my theories remain only educated guesses. It is the reality of the abduction phenomenon itself which the reader must confront, not one man's speculation about its meaning. In 1964, when my curiosity was first piqued by the dub aluminium colored disc I saw in the clouds above Cape Cod, I could never have guessed where it would lead. Since that time, I have become enmeshed in the lives of many witnesses whose encounters were, unlike mine, truly unnerving. I have spent scores of hours watching in helpless silence as these men and women relived, through hypnosis, the often harrowing abduction experiences of earlier times. Their resistance and calm and fear and fortitude have at times been almost physically palpable, and I have been moved, sometimes, to tears. For each of these people, at a certain moment in their lives, something happened, something almost unimaginable for the rest of us. I have tried to relate these encounters, these events, as directly, and with as little adornment as possible because I want the reader to experience them as I did. I have no solutions to the open-ended problems they raise, and least of all to the profound issue of their human toll. I do not believe the UFO phenomenon is malign or evilly intentioned. I fear, instead, that it is merely indifferent, though I fervently hope to be proven wrong. Notes on the Hypnosis of UFO Witnesses, a New York Times article on Saturday, November 3, 1979, describes a situation which closely parallels the use of hypnosis in recovering information in traumatic UFO abduction cases. It begins, Syracuse, November 2, a jury in a rape trial here in Onondaga. Gah County Court found the defendant guilty last night. In part on, What Can Be Done If? The basis of testimony drawn from the witness through hypnosis, the victim, married and 23 years old, was said to be so traumatized by the assault, in the spring of 1978, that for 3 months she could recall neither the circumstances of the rape nor the identity of her attacker. In a hypnotic state, however, she identified the assailant as Kirk Hughes, 21. Her neighbor and former babysitter. Further on in the article, The Times quotes William Fitzpatrick, the assistant district attorney who prosecuted the case, as saying that hypnosis was gaining acceptance as a forensic tool. I can't think of a better example than this case, he said. She was with him long enough to identify him, but was unable to do so because of the horror of it. The New York Times Science page of October 14, 1980. Carried an article by Jane E. Brody in which she discussed hypnosis as a weapon against crime. Though she warned about areas of possible abuse, she cited the successes of hypnosis in helping to solve some well-known criminal cases, the rescue of 26 schoolchildren kidnapped at gunpoint from a school bus in Chowchilla, California, in 1976 was facilitated by hypnosis of the bus driver, who then recalled enough of a license plate number to enable police to find the getaway van. Last summer, a ballerina who had seen a man with a young cellist at the Metropolitan Opera House shortly before the cellist's brutal murder was able, under hypnosis, to describe the man well enough so that a police sketch led to the arrest of a suspect. In the same article, Brody cited an interesting statistic. In the Los Angeles Police Department, 11 police officers have used the technique in about 600 cases, with 90% of the hypnotic investigations yielding information that led to the arrest of a suspect. Hypnosis, then, is accepted as a valid tool by both courts and police departments. Properly used, the technique can be an avenue to truth, particularly so when traumatic events have buried specific details beyond immediate recall. The following is an account by psychotherapist or Aphrodite claim are of her experience in using hypnosis in the investigation of the UFO abduction cases discussed in this book. Afterward, by Aphrodite claim are, PhD, it was neither by design nor out of any interest in the subject of UFOs that I became involved with Bud Hopkins's witnesses and with the effort to ascertain what might lie behind their incomplete recollection. A colleague, Dr. Robert Neiman, knowing that I use hypnosis with some of my patients, asked me if I would be willing to hypnotize a woman UFO witness who had requested a woman practitioner. I agreed. I had never read anything on UFO abductions, and I never had had a patient who reported such an experience, nor, indeed, had I even given the subject anything more than the most fleeting thought. It was only some time later, after I had become involved with the UFO world, that I realized that the amount of available information on the use of hypnosis with UFO witnesses was limited at best. Having little if anything to go on in terms of the experience of others, I was forced to develop my own procedures. Thus far, Bud Hopkins has brought me more than a dozen men and women from adjacent parts of the country, five of whom are the subjects of this book. Some of them told under hypnosis of events they had never previously reported. For others, the hypnotic state led to the recounting of additional details of reports made earlier. For all of them, the experience under hypnosis had positive results, providing a sense of release and re-oneness for people who, as they told it, had undergone frightening experiences that both mystified and disturbed them. As in psychotherapy generally, the act of repeating the story robbed it of some of its fearful aspects. Here, under hypnosis, experiences, real or imagined, buried in the unconscious were brought to the surface and released. The mystery of the time lapse, the missing hours when the abduction was alleged, what can be done to have taken place, was for some, and the subjects were helped to be at peace with and with the experiences they had reported. I began by employing techniques that I had used with the patients in my practice as a clinical psychologist and psychotherapist, making whatever changes I found useful as I developed greater experience with UFO witnesses. On the assumption that reliving the UFO abduction, if this was indeed what it was, might prove to be traumatic, I sought to make the experience of hypnosis as easy, even comfortable, as possible, while at the same time giving the subjects a sense of control over what was happening to them. With these considerations in mind, I started each opening 90-minute session with an information-gathering interview, asking for a short life history and other relevant background made real. Then I offered an opportunity to experience hypnosis for its own sake, unrelated to the UFO encounter. This trial run, I suggested, would acquaint the subject with hypnosis, so that in future sessions the process of being hypnotized, and what it felt like to be under hypnosis, would be familiar rather than strange. In this way, the subjects would be free to concentrate their energies on the experiences which they were reliving. I also wanted to dispel the notion that hypnosis was a knocked-out, unconscious experience for those who undergo it. I emphasized that they would still be aware of things going on around them, that they would be able not only to hear my voice, but also to talk with me, to open their eyes if need be, move around and even write, while still remaining under hypnosis. For our purpose, I explained, hypnosis would be a useful tool, if not necessarily a precise one, that would enable us to explore, relive, and possibly understand the mysterious events they had reported earlier. Finally, I said, there was no way of predicting in advance what, if anything, would emerge. I then asked the subject to lie down on a deep and comfortable brown leather couch in the darkened, cozy, book-lined room that is my office. I took my place on a high, backed wooden chair at the head of the couch. When the subject was comfortable and at ease, I began what I came to think of as the build-your own cloud exercise. Using standard progressive relaxation and deepening techniques to induce hypnosis. In the hypnotic state, the subjects were asked to visualize a fluffy, inviting cloud of any shape, design, or color they wished, sturdy enough to support their weight and equipped with whatever objects or devices they might need when the cloud became the vehicle to return to the past experiences we would explore together. When this image was in focus, they were asked to imagine themselves stepping into the cloud, exploring it, making sure that it was satisfactory, then letting themselves lie back, relax and go on a short ride. Thus the cloud becomes a private environment, one that fits the subject's specific needs, a friendly object they can control and direct, a personal image of unequaled possibilities. Other than David Ildam, none of the people whose case histories appear in this book were ever hypnotized before. All accepted the cloud image except one, Stephen Kilburn, who preferred a sturdy house of his own design, three quarters of which was underground, the rest hidden from view by thick trees. His fear of reliving his UFO experience was strong enough to require a well-fortified environment for his return trip. After the first get-acquainted session, the subjects returned to my office for two or sometimes three fohow-middle-dot-up sessions, each lasting one and a half to 2 hours. Like most persons under hypnosis, these subjects had a distorted sense of time. Speech was slow and often labored as they groped to recall the past. There were long silences. At the end of a 90-minute session, they emerged from hypnosis astounded to find that so much time had gone by. It felt like 20 minutes was a standard reaction. Two of the five subjects whose UFO encounters are described in this book, and at least half of the others I have put under hypnosis, complained of being cold when they were reliving their experiences. A blanket is now kept ready when UFO witnesses come to my office. About half of them also asked me to turn off all the lights in an already dimly lit room. Aside from these two unusual requests, I cannot say that these subjects exhibited any different responses from patients I have put under hypnosis in my regular therapeutic practice. Their emotional needs appeared to be diverse, like those of other client populations I have known. I did not find any drug users among the subjects whom Bud Hopkins brought, nor any alcoholism, nor any strange habits or exotic perversions. Persons who claim to have had UFO experiences, one now know, come in all sizes, shapes, ages, and sexes. Some are close to their families, others are not. They are handsome or ordinary, looking, neat or sloppy. Most are satisfied with what can be done. Their choice of careers and relatively successful. The five whose experiences are reported in this book are all college graduates, but it is not necessary to have a bachelor's degree in order to report a UFO experience. The people I have seen who claim to have had a strange encounter of whatever kind are mill people, neither psycho nor psychic, people like you and me. I could find no common thread that ties them together, other than their UFO experience, and no common pathology, indeed, no discernible pathology at all. Their fantasies are different from those of ordinary people, but only if you assume that the experiences they report are fantasies. The common variety of fantasy most of us indulge in at one time or another creates a special and pleasurable situation in which we succeed, like the 5-foot-6-inch accountant who fantasizes himself leading the Boston Celtics to the National Basketball Association Championship. But the UFO experience is not at all pleasurable. It is frightening, mysterious, deeply disturbing. If there is anything that links these people to one another, it is that all of them are deeply perplexed and troubled by their experience. Most often they are troubled by the time lapse or amnesia they have experienced, and by the question, why me? And because we live in a society which, like most societies, does not hold a different person in high esteem, the UFO witnesses I have seen our apartment to feel marked or stigmatized in some way, are ashamed and embarrassed by what they believe happened to them. They are hesitant about sharing it with others, boasting about it is usually furthest from their mind. Perhaps this accounts for the lack of conscious memory of the details of the experiences they report. They feel something strange or weird has occurred, but until they go under hypnosis, their memory fails them, in effect, protecting them from painful recollections until they grow strong enough to handle or integrate them. The sense that the UFO experience is a taboo experience, to be recalled or shared only reluctantly, soon becomes apparent to the hypnotherapist who works with these subjects. One reason for this reluctance may be that the memory of the UFO abduction has been repressed because of its traumatic nature. The mind has a way of protecting itself by repressing painful or frightening experiences. In extreme cases of this kind, we call the repression amnesia. In the case of the five UFO abductees described in this book, the amnesia was temporary. Under hypnosis, facts and events they had not previously told about came to the fore. In my judgment, if they were to undergo additional hypnotic sessions, additional details would rise to the surface. The question persists: is the UFO experience genuine, or are those who claim to have been abducted the victims of hysteria, or their own delusions? After spending more than 50 hours with a dozen subjects under hypnosis, I still cannot answer the question. Aliens from outer space are the stuff of science fiction. The photographs and other physical evidence that would establish these experiences as something more than fantasy remain disturbingly elusive. And yet, the events recounted by a variety of people from scattered places are strikingly similar, suggesting that there might be more to the whole business than mere coincidence. In different years, different people from different parts of the country all report nearly identical experiences. All of these people seem quite ordinary in the psychological sense, although they have not been subjected to the kind of psychological testing that might provide a deeper understanding of their personalities. Yet, they report details of the experience that are startling in their similarity. The content of these accounts is markedly different from most of the fantasies reported in psychological literature. Far from the pleasurable, whimsical, wish-fulfilling fantasies most of us have, these bring fear and terror. Are these, then, hallucinations? Are they false perceptions which have a compulsive sense of the reality of objects, although relevant and adequate stimuli for such perceiving are lacking? English, in their Comprehensive Dictionary of Psychological and Psychoanalytic TRMS, describe hallucinations as abnormal phenomena, though occasionally experienced by normal persons. The five subjects whose reported experiences are recounted in this book may be described as normal. That would not rule out hallucination. It is the curious similarity of their experiences that gives pause. But the answer to the question has not yet been devised, the key to unlock the secret not yet found. But Hopkins hoped that by inducing hypnosis among the five UFO abductees, I might be able to find a final answer. But what was revealed under hypnosis only deepened the mystery. New details were added, new experiences described, new questions raised. In the 2 years that I worked with the subjects whom Bud, What Can Be Do Nee, Hopkins brought to me, I used a variety of hypnotic techniques to help them return to the incident, relive their reported experience and try to make sense of it. I cannot say whether the experience was real or not. That is, I do not know, nor could hypnosis claim to establish, whether the UFO experience actually happened. I am persuaded, however, that all of the subjects do, in fact, believe that something strange and unknown did occur. It happened for them, it happened to them. Who of us is to say that it did not? Since it is difficult to provide a consistent explanation for these similar accounts, a real problem remains. A problem requiring further exploration. End of extract of this book.